Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Laufer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, I am your host, Adam Lowther, and today, as every single episode, we have a great guest. Of course, I'm talking about Tom Carrico. He is a senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., and he is the guy that knows the most about missile defenses. Tom, you've been working missile defenses for as long as I've known you, and you're probably one of the guys who knows more about it than anybody I know, for sure. So who better to have on NucleCast to talk about Golden Dome than you? And so that's what we did. We had you on. So it's great to have you on NucleCast.
Well, hey, Adam, great to see you, and great to be here again.
Yeah. It's, you know, when it comes to missile defenses, you're my go-to guy. So with Golden Dome, you know, that's been in the news a lot here lately. There's sort of been some movement. There's a lot that the press has picked up on, but there's still a lot that's uncertain. And so I was hoping on this episode you could walk us through, you know, where is Golden Dome? What is it supposed to look like? Sort of how long is it supposed to take? There's just a lot of unanswered questions that I'm hoping you can answer. So can you sort of kick us off with sort of what is Golden Dome?
So what I would say is Golden Dome is a couple things. In the first instance, it is a long overdue response to a cacophony of air and missile threats that have been building up and being left woefully unanswered for many years now. And all you have to do is just sort of go through the CSIS Missile Defense Project reports of the past 10 years, and it was 10 years this month that we kicked off, and see the litany of things that we said, hey, this isn't being addressed, from cruise missile defense to hypersonic defense to space sensors and on and on. And lo and behold, a lot of that stuff shows up in spades in the executive order, the Iron Dome for America executive order of January 27 of this year. So in some respects, it is a long overdue response to where the threat has gone. These have become weapons of choice, not boutique threats, but yes, weapons of choice that both we and our adversaries reach for early and often. Witness, you know, every time that we want to take out a Syrian air defense thing, it's the Tomahawks. Every time that the Iranians and the Houthis and, yes, the Russians, and you know, just this weekend, over Memorial Day weekend, the largest single-day drone and missile attack by the Russians, I think 367 combined projectiles of various kinds in one day. Lots and lots and lots of this stuff. The single biggest day still remains April 14 of last year in Iran's multi-vector, multi-azimuth, multi-delivery system attack on Israel, which was thankfully and miraculously almost completely deflected through some very impressive efforts, U.S. and Israeli and partner coalition efforts. But that's one thing. The other thing that Golden Dome is it's an accounting function. What do I mean by that? We have the services, we have the Missile Defense Agency, we have sort of national technical means, stuff like that, to detect, track, surveil, classify, all these different missile threats. But the Golden Dome Initiative is a pot of money. It's a pot of money for new stuff that is additive, that is, you know, catching up with the things that have been neglected, things like that. And it's important to kind of think about that, because Golden Dome, as I've probably said to about half the reporters in this town over the past couple months, it's not a system. It's not a program. There are the systems with their specific fire control loops unto themselves. Those things exist. They will continue to exist. But the Golden Dome initiative, effort, what have you, budgeting, accounting function, is getting after and adding to those things. Some things will be enhanced. Some things will be boosted. Some things we'll just buy more of. And yes, some things will be integrated and created anew relative to today. The other thing that it is it is, for the moment, finite in time. By which I mean, an executive order is an order. It is a directive. And the president, the commander-in-chief, has a lot of control over the executive branch and the military. But to paraphrase Eisenhower and the Truman Exchange, you know, it comes down to persuasion. It does not. You can't simply direct and tell people to do things. You have to persuade them. And that's why if there's not, I would say, more discussion about the why and the what of what we're trying to accomplish here, that the Golden Dome effort initiative will be short-lived. There needs to be just a whole lot more attention to explaining on Capitol Hill and in the public what it is we're trying to do here.
So are there things that people think that Golden Dome is that it actually is not, and that, you know, you kind of need to dispel what it's not going to be?
Yeah, that's what I kind of try to do every day. You know, you see all this speculation. It's going to cost $500 billion. It's going to cost $2 trillion, to which I sort of get tired of it. I get fed up and I say, no, it's not. I can promise you it's not. We're not going to do that thing. We're not going to spend $2 trillion over the next 3 years or whatever it is that people are speculating on this effort. I would love it if we did, but that's not going to happen. Well, what this is going to be is something in the far more tractable and far more pedestrian ultimate. Look, there's a lot of ambitions for next gen technology, lots of investments in space-based sensors, directed energy, non-kinetic, this, that, and the other thing. And yay, verily, space-based interceptors too, which we can talk about perhaps if you'd like. But the order of magnitude, take a look at the reconciliation bill. I think that's probably an indicator of where this is likely to be, which is $25 billion additional dollars that's going to kind of the next generation stuff. And that, by the way, is multi-year money. And so, you know, when the president last week said 3 years, $175 billion, I think there's probably some charitable interpretation of that. The $175 billion, it was not clarified over how many years that's going to be. What exactly is going to be delivered in 3 years is unclear. There will be some things delivered in 3 years, but there's going to be much longer term of effort for the development and the fielding of new things. So I think everybody needs to just simmer down and remember that we live in the real world, and that there's other competing priorities, and that actually I think that the people will be pleasantly surprised, will likely to be pleasantly surprised about where this ends up in terms of the meat and potatoes, in terms of the blocking and tackling of realistic and achievable goals and programs and metrics. So I think keeping this, recognizing that this is likely to be a realistic effort, I think is kind of the beginning of wisdom here.
Yeah, so because, you know, there's many folks that have wondered, do we have the technology to stop hypersonics? Are we going to protect, you know, the entire country, population centers, just critical military communications targets? Give us a little, you know, a little sense of what is going to be the focus of Golden Dome in terms of, if it's a missile defense, what's it going to defend?
Well, there's a number of phrases in the executive order that could lead one in different directions on this. One is that it is about securing our second strike. One is that it is expressly about protecting the American people and infrastructure. And a third phrase from the executive order is that it is capabilities-based. Well, the thing about capabilities-based is you can kind of figure those, you can kind of wait and figure out exactly what your defended asset list is as opposed to your critical asset list. Critical asset is the things you'd like to defend. The defended asset list is the things you'll actually defend. Now, for rogue state ICBMs, that's the sort of thing we want to defend all U.S. territory, right? And because of their basically a jump shot, their lofted shot, and because you basically know their trajectory, that's plausible, that's possible. But for aerial threats, which for the garden variety cruise missile threats that we see going into Ukraine on a daily or weekly basis, that's just not possible. And here, the beginning of wisdom is to recognize that you cannot defend everything and that it would be foolhardy to peanut butter spread your defenses and try to defend everything. What you'll end up doing is you'll defend nothing well. And I want to refer you to two reports. One, on the cruise missile defense report, I'm still very, very proud of this report we put out in the summer of 2022, called North America as a Region 2, an integrated, phased, and approach to cruise missile, air and cruise missile defense of the homeland, when we really, really emphasize that point in there. And the second report, because you asked about hypersonic defense, is a report we put out, I think maybe about 6 months, 9 months before that, is called Complex Air Defense. And that emphasizes that hypersonic defense is against these high-speed maneuvering things that by definition are maneuvering at sustained and controlled duration at these hypersonic speeds in the atmosphere. So hypersonic defense is a species of air defense, which means it's hard to predict where they're going, which means you can't defend everything. So we just have to accept that fact, and we have to be clear, I think, in communicating to the American people that we're going to have to be selective as hard choices are going to be made. But that the Golden Dome or active air and missile defense is not operating in isolation, that we have lots of other things going on. And we also, in addition to our deterrence by denial efforts like this, we also have our deterrence by retribution, by punishment efforts as well. So it is additive to our overall deterrence calculus, not operating by itself.
Yeah, that's one of the questions that I've heard people broach is is Golden Dome, for example, they might say we need more nuclear weapons, but you know, there's a lot of folks who don't want more nuclear weapons, a larger arsenal. Is Golden Dome going to be sort of that additional component that will, you know, for example, as the Chinese build more nuclear weapons, Golden Dome will essentially give us, in effect, the extra numbers that we would otherwise want if we were to build offensive capabilities? So I've heard some sort of variant of that question. Can you maybe talk about that? Is that sort of an intent, or is that just, you know, a lot of people asking questions without any real sort of basis?
So recognizing that this is the NucleCast and your audience is nuclear, let me first answer that as I think you probably intended it, which is to say, do we need more? Will this help us not have as many, need more numbers? And I interpreted that to more numbers of nuclear weapons. So right. I'll also genuflect and say that I do think we do need more nuclear weapons. Yea, verily. And one could come to that conclusion. That's kind of how we thought about the safeguard system back in the 70s, the safeguard system to defend our ICBM fields. And again, you have that foothold in the executive order that could take you down that particular primrose path. But I believe that the most compelling logic for this is in terms of contributing, yes, to damage limitation, but also to non-nuclear strategic attack, which is to say to raising the threshold for attack against especially our conventional forces, our joint force, of which at any given time 75% or so is within CONUS, to pin that up, hold it up, and preclude our power projection broadly. And so if Guam were to go away tomorrow without any nuclear radiation being released, that would be a strategic event. It's still surprising to me the number of 4 stars who equate strategic attack with big nuclear attack on the homeland. And I feel like I pound my spoon on the high chair with some frequency talking about how, no, I want you to think about if Guam goes away tomorrow with no radiation being released, it is still a strategic event. And so I believe that the most compelling logic here for this kind of an effort is to raise the threshold for what a China or a Russia might perceive as what they could get away with under the perceived threshold of nuclear reprisal to defeat, to preclude, to retard our power projection in some kind of a regional conflict over there, which is why we named our cruise missile defense report North America's Region 2 to emphasize that this is not a regional problem over there. It is a regional problem here that affects everything else and our place in the world. So non-nuclear strategic attack and for non-ballistic things as well as ballistic things. I know the ballistic things seem to get a lot of the red meat attention. If I was to attack the United States, put in charge of attacking the United States, taking us apart, I would do it with a lot of non-ballistic things first, which is kind of how Russia does largely in terms of Ukraine, for instance. I'm rambling a bit, but that's my perhaps long-winded answer to your things. Yes, we need more nukes, but there's other problem sets that are non-nuclear that are super important here.
I mean, just by way of example, I mean, the Russians can launch, you know, KH-102s from Russian airspace, you know, a low observable cruise missile that can strike targets. We probably wouldn't notice it until we started seeing things, you know, go boom. And then we would know at that point that, you know, that we were under attack. So, I mean, your point is well taken that there's lots of ways. And I think the Russians as well are selling, you know, containerized cruise missiles, you know, that I think that's a good for sale in the Russian arms market that, you know, are sort of loaded onto ships and then the container pops open and a cruise missile pops out. So there's lots of options to sort of do what exactly what you sort of talked about. So it's a point well taken. Now, we're at that time in the show where you do have to take a quick break. So we'll do that. And when we come back, I want you to turn to space and tell me about what Golden Dome components will be in space. Are we going to have lasers? Are we going to have missiles in space? Exactly what's going to be there. You're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Ann Law Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back, and we're talking to Tom Carrico from CSIS about Golden Dome and exactly what it is. Okay, so I posited the question before the break about space and what's going to go in space. So tell us all about what Golden Dome has in store.
Yeah. So, and I posited earlier that some of the tea leaves to read here are from the reconciliation bill. So let's talk about what's in the reconciliation bill. I think there's $7.2 billion over a number of years, perhaps 5 years period of time, for space sensors. That's really super important. And we put out another report in December of 2023 called Getting on Track, which is, again, the most fulsome public description of space sensors and all their glory that I encourage people to look at. And one of the key takeaways from that is please, please, please do not neglect the fire control quality requirements for missile defense as you go out and do all these wonderful things on counter space and space situational awareness and all that jazz. So we're looking here at the prospect of that finally getting energized in a major way. And the Hypersonic and Ballistic Tracking Space Sensor, HBTSS, was the only program that was actually named in the January executive order. So that's a good thing. Hopefully they will turn up the volume dial or and accelerate that program in some way. They're orbiting. The prototypes are orbiting right now. That's something that we can do, and I hope that pursuant to the executive order, they actually go and do that. That's the first and foremost. There'll probably be a handful of other cats and dogs. There's money in there, and there's talk about, you know, missile defeat, all the left of launch goodness. Turns out left of launch, like scud hunting, is pretty hard. But nevertheless, there's probably some goodness there, and that's to be embraced. And then, of course, the other big category, ground target moving indicators, GMTI, tracking things in the air from space, that's all important too. Things that interact with space, I'm thinking especially over-the-horizon radars. I'm a massive fan of over-the-horizon radars. Absolutely going to be critical for cruise missile defense of the homeland. I hope that is. I would put the pedal to the metal on the OTHRs like nobody's business. Just build them and pump them out there as fast as you can. Us and the Canadians are going to be needing to do a whole heck of a lot of that. But the big last category, of course, is space-based interceptors. And I think it's something like $5.6 billion or something like that in the reconciliation bill. It's a bill, not an act, not an appropriation yet, so we'll see. That is for the development and presumably the fielding of space-based interceptors. I'll say, and I wrote an article with one of my CSIS colleagues, Clayton Swope, in February on this, which is that I believe this is the opportunity is ripe, the time is ripe to go after this in a way that it wasn't, for example, 8 years ago in the first Trump administration. What's changed since then? Space Force has been stood up. Space Command has been stood up. That has now persisted in a bipartisan way across the Biden administration. But two other things. One, the fact and the acceptance of the fact on a broad basis that space is now a warfighting domain, that is the single most important thing that has changed. And so yeah. I think about SBIs. I mean, but the challenge here, Adam, is everybody says that. We go to the conferences, we hear people recite the incantations. Space is a warfighting domain. Yay, verily, huh? But the thing is, I don't believe that the implications of that fact have really sunk in. And I think that the implications of that fact are going to be scary, and they're going to be ugly. And we have to be thinking those ugly thoughts about what that is really going to mean. And it's going to mean, among other things, space fires. The salience of space fires, which is to say things in and from and to space, to all the other domains, land, sea, and air. And we said in February, and I absolutely believe, that we will get space-based interceptor capability. We will get it, but we will back into it. We will back into it because we will be pursuing space control, space superiority, counter space, ASATs, and as a result of that, we will accrete space-based interceptors, as it were, through kinetic or non-kinetic means, one kind or another. That doesn't mean that it's going to be a great Astrodome shield, because the other guys are doing all kinds of nasty stuff that's going to complicate our weapon engagement zones, shall we say. Except not in the sea, but in space. So it's going to be hard, it's going to be uncertain, and there's going to be a lot of doubt about a lot of the capabilities that will be filled in that kind of stuff. But I think that's sort of the nature of the thing. So I think people, again, I'm repeating myself, but I think people need to be sober and to be crystal clear about the reality that we're living in space as a warfighting domain and contextualize the discussions. Because, they say that doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. And so simply approaching space-based interceptors in the same way that it's been talked about in the 80s and the 90s and so on, I don't think is a great idea. But what the most salient fact is the emergence of space as a warfighting domain. And that is what has changed. Launch costs, yes, that's important. Technology changes on terms of size, weight, and power, avionics, computing, edge, this, that, and the other thing. Yes, all of that makes space-based intercept far more viable than it used to. Witness a 2022 report we did on boost phase intercept for CSIS Missile Defense. I encourage you to take a look at that as well. All of that is true, but the most salient fact is that space is now a warfighting domain.
So here lately, as there's become a little bit that's better known about what Golden Dome is supposed to be, the Arms Control community has been highly critical of Golden Dome. And we've seen a number of articles that, say that Golden Dome is it's a bad idea. So keeping nuclear weapons is a bad idea. Building defenses is a bad idea. It seems like anything that we might do is a bad idea. Can you perhaps maybe give us, say, the top three arguments that are made against Golden Dome, and are these good or bad arguments, and why?
Well, I'm a liberal arts major, Adam. I'm not an engineer, so I'm going to repair to Don Quixote, which is to say that there's a whole lot of tilting at windmills. There's a whole lot of attacking of imaginary enemies here, and you know, when people do the sort of linear projections of, well, it takes X amount of Iron Dome batteries to defend Israel, so we need 1,000x to defend the United States. Like, that's silly, okay? It's just silly. And there's, you can just open up the Google and find all number of silly computations about this. Where, again, I'm going back to, it's going to be in the low double-digit billions. It's not going to be in the trillions that we're doing for this. And that's okay. We're going to get there. We're going to increase our measure of protection in a significant way. I'll just say, the conversation on active air and missile defense has changed. I've been doing this a while. We both have gray hair. I've been doing this a while, but the conversation on air and missile defense has changed diametrically in the past 3 years since the beginning of the Ukraine conflict. And the reason that it's changed diametrically, I no longer have to go through the tedious exercise of debating people about whether a patriot in Poland is provocative and destabilizing. Because we see patriot engaging, no kidding, Russian missiles, sophisticated Russian missiles, and doing so successfully and saving people from being killed. Not perfectly. No weapon system is perfect. But we see it as a stabilizing force. And as the Biden administration frequently said, you know, the reason Ukraine is still sovereign is because of missile defense. It would not be if not for these things. And the Ukrainians put the Patriot on their currency, on a quarter or 10-cent piece or whatever they call it. Because of its importance here. The two most asked for things that they want is long-range missiles and missile defenses. Those happen to also be the top two modernization priorities of Japan and Australia and a bunch of other folks too. So everybody just needs to calm down and be realistic and look at reality as it presents itself. The tide has shifted here. And I find it hard to give the sillier arguments more credence than they do.
All right. So it's that time in the show where we have to bring out Bob the genie. And so as I rub my magic lamp, Bob, of course, grants all guests free wishes about the topics we've been discussing. And so with that in mind, I mean, you mentioned gray hair. Bob's not going to fix that for either of us. But he can handle some Golden Dome related wishes. So, Tom, what is your first wish?
My first wish is a very lean Golden Dome office in the Pentagon with as few people as possible that is empowered to heck to the hilt by the Secretary and the DepSec with all the acquisition authorities and resources that they need. And that they then in turn go and empower the service and agency entities to do what they're good at, as opposed to creating a new bureaucracy or creating a new agency or something, something. So organization and authorities and access. Actually, that could be all three wishes, but that's like the number one thing. Number two thing is if we can do nothing else, I would say sensors. Hecton more sensors. Metric hecton of more sensors. Especially, I'm especially, my pet rocks are OTHRs, over the horizon radars, and space sensors, right? I love my radars. I love all my children. I love all the missile defense radars that we have, but these are two categories we don't really have at all right now, hardly at all. And we got to get after those other things, as well. And then the third one, it's a little bit more, pedestrian. Less next gen, and that I just want more. I want capacity. I want more MSEs and more THAADs and more standard missiles. I want more capacity of the NGIs and yes, of the currently existing radars and things like that. It's less exciting and new than the other things, but, you know, we need more munitions. We need more sensors. These things are imperfectly survivable. got to have lots of them. And look, we're expending Standard missiles in the Red Sea and Tomahawks in the Red Sea at an alarming rate. I mean, look, the Houthis have it coming. The Iranians have it coming. But goodness gracious, we're spending a lot, way too many there. We're spending THAADs in the defense of Israel. There are friends. We like our Israeli friends. We want to defend them. But goodness gracious, we're not buying THAAD interceptors to replace even the ones that we're expending. So that's why the third wish, Adam, is simply capacity.
That's I think those are all three, you know, wishes that Bob can work on. So now, as we wrap the show up, and you know, you think about that mic drop moment, what are those last things that you want our audience to remember 6 months or a year from now, when something about Golden Dome pops up and they remember this podcast? What's that thing you want them to remember?
Well, sadly, it's probably that I told you so. It's probably that I told you so, that it wasn't going to be a $2 trillion effort, that there were going to be organizational and authority problems, that we need to actually shore up our sensors and all this other kind of stuff. And oh, by the way, that the cottage industry of the disarmament community is just out to lunch in terms of what this is for. Again, non-nuclear strategic attack. This is a contributor to deterrence, not a competition with deterrence. I'll be here. Just remember, I told you so, Adam.
All right, Tom Perrico, thanks for joining us on this episode of NucleCast.
Okay, thanks.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you next time. Well, you heard it there. Golden Dome is not going to be $1 trillion $1 trillion program. It's going to be far more cost effective. It's not going to be the end all be all that'll save everybody. It's going to be more limited. It's going to, you know, focus on specific critical targets, you know, help to sort of bin what Golden Dome is and what it's not. And so anytime we can do that, that's a good thing. So it's good to have Tom on.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunthal. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.